Okay.
So I wanted this week to start and maybe complete the tour in the Shulchan Aruch that deals with this issue. Interestingly enough, a question that I haven't resolved yet, but the Rabbi Steinmetz mentioned to me, someone sent him a question about this new kind of oven, a kind of convection oven that uses steam to cook. So it sounds like there's a separate, you know, a reservoir for water you put in there, and it really does it by steaming. And the question is, does that have an impact upon the use of the oven for both milchiks and fleishiks? So that's a question still to be determined. But right now we're talking about our more typical regular ovens. So I wanted to start by, I wouldn't call it, it's sort of reviewing, but we already spent an extensive amount of time the last couple of weeks exploring the machlokas between the Rif and Rashi versus Rabbeinu Tam as to how to resolve the seeming or real contradiction between the Gemara Pesachim and the Gemara Avodah Zarah. And here, the Torah is going to present the position or positions and the Pesach. And then we'll take a look at the Shulchan Aruch. One comment about mechanics of ovens, or how ovens were made, and really we're talking about three different kinds of ovens. The Talmudic oven was typically, as far as we can tell, something like the shape of a barrel. Imagine a barrel with kind of, you know, shaped like this, kind of narrow at the top. But what you would do is you would take the bread. There was the widest opening was at the top. There was an opening at the bottom where you could put fuel in on the bottom of the oven. What you would do is you would light the fuel at the bottom of the oven. You would take something like bread, if you were baking it, and you would stick it, from the top you'd insert it, stick it to the inside of the oven, and that's how it would bake. It would bake probably from the there's a discussion in Shabbos, but I suspect it would bake more from the heat of the oven itself, from the oven wall, rather than from the exposure to the fire. And in fact, what? No, it was stuck. The dough was stuck. And what was such a skill, we see from Masechta Shabbos, one of the things that was not considered a malacha, but the Gemara says it's a chachma, is called rediyas apas, being able to extract the bread from the oven without breaking it, have it crumble into pieces. So the Gemara says, the Gemara in the beginning of fourth parak of Rosh Hashanah says, quotes, trying to explain why we don't blow shofar on Shabbos, but they quote a pasuk that says, "Kol malacha lo sasu yatzasa tkiya shofar adias apas shehem chachma v'lo malacha." Chachma, that's the Gemara's expression in Daf Chavtesam and Beis in Rosh Hashanah. So Radias Apas is an Issa Darabanan, but it's not an Issa Daraisa. In fact, there's a famous question on a different topic that Gemara asked in the first parak of Shabbos, which is, let's say you see your friend accidentally put something into the oven on Shabbos. You forgot it was Shabbos and he sticks the bread in. Are you allowed to do Radias Apas to remove it from the oven? Meaning, can you violate an Issa Darabanan to save him from being Mechal Shabbos Daraisa? Because he's not Mechal Shabbos Daraisa until the bread actually bakes. If it doesn't bake, it was nice try, but no cigar, because you tried to Mechal Shabbos or B'shogeg, but you weren't Mechal Shabbos. So that's the question of, should you do a small Isser to save your friend from a big Isser? I run into that question. A different shir. The Gemara changes the question. The Gemara changes the question too. But I just mentioned that by point that Radias Apas was also, but only Midr Rabbanan. But they had to do it as opposed to us. If you need to take bread out of the oven now, there's no chachma involved. You just open the oven door, you take your glove, your mitts, you pull the rack out, and you're done. Right? There's nothing. You know, it's a totally different experience. But for them, Radias Apas was a big deal because their ovens were different.
There's
the second
people who make pita like that.
What?
Today. There's still people who make pita like that today. I've been to my
stuck to the side of an oven or on the bottom of the oven?
That's how the Indians cook.
And I've been to a Yemeni place.
So sometimes they make on top of a dome oven, actually. I've seen.
I saw it on the inside.
Inside. So that's fine. In the medieval period, it would seem, if I am to understand correctly, that they use an oven probably more akin to sometimes you'll see a brick oven, where what they would do is they had an enclosed area where the top might have had a little smokestack. I'm not sure if there was an open you could let smoke out. And the main entrance was on the side. And what you would typically do there is you would preheat the oven. Not the way we preheat our ovens. We do preheat our ovens often when we bake. But there you would really, really heat the oven in such a way that the walls were now really hot. You didn't need fuel anymore in the oven. You put stuff in, you could sort of close the door to the oven, and stuff would cook from the residual heat. And that would last for a very, very long time. I mentioned that in the last couple of weeks.
Pizza oven.
What?
It's like a modern
brick oven pizza.
Yeah. No, it's got to be brick oven, right? Yeah. In other words, there are metal oven pizza, which are more, what they're just a specialized version of our regular home ovens. Mm-hmm. But our ovens, when you turn them, when you heat them up, they're much, much better insulated. The goal is not to heat the walls of the oven. That would be a waste of energy. And when you turn our ovens off, 30 minutes later, your ovens are room temperature. So, but their ovens, at least in the medieval period, appear to have their door on the side. Because the Rishonim talk about this. Some want to make a distinction between the Talmudic oven and the medieval oven. Our ovens also have the door on the side, but obviously our technology in terms of the way we heat things is totally different. It really is the fuel source that's heating things. We also, as best as I can tell, I've been trying to find some answers on this, but our ovens also have some type of a venting system, not for the purposes of carbon monoxide, but simply for some of the vapor, the food, or whatever it is. That's where you can smell the food. So usually on your range, if you have a standard range at the back, is where there's an exhaust from the oven. So which means our ovens are also a little bit open in that regard. So those are three kinds of ovens. And the central question, we're going to talk about the Shulchan Aruch, but the question that always preoccupies me whenever I teach Smicha students is the question of how do you deal with our ovens today in terms of Milchiks and Fleishiks? At least for a very long time, I think many, many firm Jews, it's still true in some places, would use the same oven for Milchiks and Fleishiks, not at the same time. And it really wasn't an issue, and I believe that is my Rebbe's Psaq, that appears to be the Psaq of the Shulchan Aruch, but we have to talk about where some other opinions come from. On the back of the sheet is a tshuva from Moshe Feinstein, in which he, which someone was arguing to him why it was mutter, and Moshe wasn't persuaded by any of the arguments he did raise. He wasn't sure about certain things. Eventually, we'll hopefully get to that. But I wanted to start by looking at the Tur and the Shulchan Aruch, which really will, the Tur will present almost a review for us of the basic issues in the Gemara, and then we will see how the Shulchan Aruch. It's really the Ramah. The Mechaber's Psak is very simple. The Ramah is more complicated. So the Tur writes, and this is the first source, Kosav HaRashba, Pas She'afa'o B'tanur Im HaBasar. If you bake bread in the oven with meat at the same time, Yesh Meha Ga'onim She'asu Lechaloso HaPas She'recho K'taymo V'yesh Matirin.
Rabbi, should we assume that this is the old oven?
They're not distinguishing between, most Rishonim don't really distinguish between the medieval and the classical ovens. I mention that only because there are some shittos which sort of or maybe barely make it into halacha, and we don't really accept that, argue that they're really different. And we're more machmir on our ovens, because the argument was that their ovens had a major opening at the top, where stuff could escape, reach could escape, where our ovens, where the entrance is on the side, there isn't so much at the top. But so I just mentioned that to be aware, because such a position does exist, even if we don't really accept it. And then it should bring us a recognition that our ovens might actually be different. In other words, anything that's said here, we could argue, I'm not going to actually, we could argue, might be different. So, the Tur writes here that basar, which was cooked with pasta, are those who are prohibited eating it. I don't think he means prohibited eating the bread in this case. He means prohibited eating the bread with milk. Mm-hmm. Remember that real fleishik bread that looks like bread, you're not allowed to eat at all. Same thing for milchiks. Don't ask me how the OU gets away with, sometimes they certain breads that the OU put their hashkach on, and it's not entirely clear to me why that was really okay. If you're talking about a Danish, or you're talking about what they're going to call pashtida, which is pashtida is what we would call, I guess, a meat bereka. So those things, by definition, don't look like bread, and therefore it's not a problem, not included in the gzeira. The Gemara says that you can make milchik bread if it's ke'ein tura. That's tura with a tuf. So the question is, what does ke'ein tura mean? So the two positions are shown, and we accept both. One is ke'ein tura, Rashi says, is like the eye of a cow, meaning a tiny amount of bread that's going to be eaten one shot. In other words, you're going to take it out of the oven, eat it, be done. So you're not worried that you're going to leave it around, forget that it's milchik bread, and then eat it with the meat. The other position, ke'ein tura, means you made it in a different shape. It was kind of like you made it in the shape of an ox or something like that. So that position is accepted as well, that if you make the bread in a funny shape, or there's something about the shape of the bread that tells you that this is not regular bread, so then it's not a problem either. But if you have regular milchik bread or regular fleishik bread, I assume it would be less common, unless you're using like kosher lard. So in those cases, they're also to consume it, even with nothing else. It's prohibited to eat them. So here, I think what the Torah is quoting from the Gonim, it's the Rif's position as well, is that you're not allowed to eat this bread with milk, even though it might be that reicha lav milsahi. V'chein v'yesh matir, and those who permit it, v'chein nire adkan. V'chein pasak Rashi, the reach lav milsahi, umuta la'ochla afila b'chalav. Rashi paskins, not, if you remember, not like the Rif. If you remember, we had the Gemara Pesachim that had the Machlokas Rav and Levi, and what was vexing to those who wanted to paskin leniently was the two stories at the end of the Gemara, where bread cooked with meat and fish cooked with meat could not be consumed with milk. And Rashi had to say, very nice, but we don't paskin like those opinions, because we paskin like Levi. Those two memers are going like Rav, but we paskin like Levi because of the Gemara Avodah Zarah, where Rava is the one who says Reicha Lav Milsahi. So that's how Rashi just said, we ignore those two lines in the Gemara, those two stories, because we don't paskin that way. So that's what the Torah quotes here. But I believe that the Yesh, the Osrim that he quoted first, was the position of the Rif, which said, despite the fact that we paskin, that Reicha Lav Milsahi, and that if you cook kosher and treif meat together at the same time in the same oven, you can still eat the kosher meat. But if you cook meat with bread, for some reason, you have to eat the bread without milk. Whatever the reason was, that was the Rif's position. The other Rishon and the Rif gave a couple of approaches. The Ramban disagreed. He gave a couple of different approaches. But bottom line is that was the first position that the Rashba quoted. But then the Rashba says that those think it's mutter, and he thinks that's right. And that's Rashi's opinion, that Reicha Lav Milsahi after the fact, period, end of discussion. So even if you cook meat, kosher bread with kosher meat, you're still allowed to eat that bread with meat, with milk. And then he says, Rabbeinu Tam Pasak, the Reach Milsahi. Rabbeinu Tam Paskin, that Reach is Milsahi. And this is, forget for the case of bread and meat. It means kosher meat and treif meat in the same oven. Rabbeinu Tam says, the meat's treif. The kosher meat is treif, following Rav's opinion. Umihu dafke betanur katan kemo shalahem, avo betanurim shalanu hagedolim shari. That was only in their ovens, which were very small, but our ovens, which are much larger. So this is not about where the opening is. This is just about the size of the oven. Our ovens, Rabbeinu Tam says it's permitted. It even sounds a little bit like Rabbeinu Tam holds it's permitted to do l'chatchila, which is rather surprising. Because of the Sefer HaMitzvos, Sefer HaMitzvos, I assume it's the Smag, Ramosha Mikusi, that Upir Shuli Rabosai HaMachzik Yud Beis Esronim Zetanur Gadol. If it holds 12 Esronim, that's considered a big oven. I think we once did the calculation in Shir. I think it was like if we could hold something like 8 gallons of milk, 8 or 9 milk gallon containers, that would be considered a big oven, if I'm not mistaken. I haven't done this in a long time.
What's the average oven size
today? I think it's bigger than that. I think I could be wrong, but I think that you could probably fit 8 or 9 milk gallons, into our ovens. I think I could possibly I'm wrong. And this discussion, remember, is only about for cooking them at the same time. We're not talking about what?
I agree. That's a lot of
what?
Eight to nine
gallons of milk.
Well, maybe you can put...
Who does the cooking in your house?
3D.
Definitely not me.
Adrian, I also do cook. This is not necessarily a gender thing, but do you think you could fit 8 or 9 milk gallon containers in your oven?
Yeah.
I think so.
Without the rack.
The racks are irrelevant for this, yes. This is not a we're not worried about fitting with the stuff. The point is, I think that the ovens are large enough. Now, my sense of the medieval ovens, at least things when I've seen, are much bigger than even our ovens, but nonetheless, I think our ovens are big enough. The toaster oven, correct. The toaster oven is a taner katan.
What isn't there a difference if it's liquid that you're cooking or solid?
Let's hold on. Let's wait. We've got to be patient here. Okay. So that was the position that the tour describes here. By the way, this is the wrong place for the tour. The tour actually belongs in where he really goes into it, Hilchos Tarovos. Here he mentions this briefly only because it's the last siman in Hilchos Basar B'Chalav. So the first two things, I forget what the first two lines in this tour, which I cut out, are about milchik bread, freishik bread, and things like that. Or if you, I know we wouldn't do this, but they would. If you smear the inside of the oven with fat, with tallow, And then you cook bread in it, so that bread is fellatio canasso to eat, right? That, those are the first two cases. You knead milk, dough with milk, or you're tuch the oven, you smear the inside of the oven, you plaster it with tallow, so then it's fellatio bread. That's really what this is about. And this last piece that I put here, the third sif in the Torah is just kind of the throwaway line. The real place this discussion is relevant is in Hilchos Tarovos, which is the next section in Shulchan Aruch. It begins Simen Tzadi Ches, but the Simen that deals with Reach is Simen Kuf Ches.
Because what you just mentioned with the tallow,
yeah.
Isn't that an issue of Olea rather than...
Well, no, the problem is that the stuff is on the inside of the oven, right. And then you fire the oven, and they say that unless you kasha the oven, you can't, then if you put meat in it, you put bread in it, the bread is not, it's not, remember that there's even for the Rif, there's a distinction between fleishik bread and bread cooked with fleishiks. In other words, if I make fleishik bread, which either be because I use it as one of the ingredients, or I smear the side of the oven with it and I stick the bread on, so that's like making fleishik bread, you can't eat that bread at all. If I cook bread in an oven with meat at the same time, but they're not touching one another, so that, we don't say you can't eat the bread, we just say that you can't eat the bread with milk. Right, so the concern when you smear this out of the oven is that it's considered mamashus, or the blios are real, as opposed to just reach. Right. So now the Torah in Simen Kufches, source number 2, says the following. Reach shel isur shenisarev beheter. If you have the smell of davar asur, which gets mixed in with the heter, kigon, besar nevela shetzla'o betanur im besar shchuta. You cook nevela meat... You roast. Be careful, Isaac. The roast a nevela meat in an oven with shchuta meat. So pligi bar Rav Velevi, Rav Asar Velevi Shari. Now, so that we saw the machlokas. One comment about the word slow of roasting. When we touch upon Yoredeya issues, we talk about the difference between sli and bishul. The definition of sli is something that is cooked without liquid, not stewing in a liquid. The definition of bishul is cooking in a liquid. Now, ironically, in the context of most of Hilchos Taruvos, whenever we deal with the mixtures and so on, we tend to assume that bishul actually does a better job and more problematic job of distributing flavor. Whereas tzli has a limited capacity to distribute flavor. So, for example,
So
let me give you an example. If I were to take a piece of hot, flaming hot, roasting kosher meat and treif meat and touch them to one another, at least I'll put din hagemar, maybe the way svardim paskin. So I would have to only remove in the parts that came in contact. If I scraped away what's called kedei netila, we have three different shiurim. We have kedei klipa, which means literally to peel off. If you could take a peeler, that would be kedei klipa. We have something kedei letila, which is assumed to be the thickness of a finger, and then we have kulo, the entire thing. If I had, let's say, not super fatty, two pieces of meat that touched one another, so it would be sufficient to peel away kedei netila, a finger's depth on the parts that touched, and I could eat the kosher meat. If I take two pieces of meat, kosher and treif, and I put them in a pot in the liquid and cook them, the entire kosher piece is also. It makes sense, because the cooking, the liquid, distributes the flavor throughout. It does make sense. By reach, it seems we might be more machmir by tzli than we are by bishul. So, with this definition in mind, the Torah right now is talking about tzli, open tzli. I have two spits with meat on them. They're not touching one another, but it is open and it is roasting. It is tzli. And it's a machlokas Rav and Levi. We'll talk about what the din would be with bishul later, meaning I have two pots, sitting in the oven. One is kosher, one is treif, one is milchut, one is meat, etc. What is the status in that case, where you have things that are sitting, and once it's in a pot, it's possible to have what we call tzli kedar, which is pot roast. You can have such a thing, although I don't know, today's pot roast probably winds up with liquid in the bottom. Right, so that's, this is literally tzli kedar, where you don't really have any liquid accumulating. So we're going to talk about whether that's different here. But here, clearly, right now, we're talking about tzli, and tzli, as we're going to see, is actually more problematic. just as an aside to understand the one area that we all deal with on a not regular basis, hopefully, but in terms of the difference between Sli and Bishul is kashering. There, we're more machmir in what we would call Sli than in Bishul. What I mean by that is the following. It's not really Sli, but if something absorbs, if a vessel absorbs from a food with a liquid medium, then it always suffices to do Hagalah. You only need to use a liquid medium. And therefore, that solves a lot of problems in a lot of cases. But if something was used without a liquid medium, directly the solid touching the kli and both very hot, then that is where you need libud. So that's a situation where we're in effect more machmir on what we call sli. A field baking would be the same thing, where you don't really have a liquid at a certain point, than we are by bishul. So, right, well, that's the principle going, but the assumption is that it means is that it's harder to get out stuff of sli than it is the stuff of bishul. Okay. So the Tur says there's a machlokas Rav and Levi. Pasak Rashi, at the end of the first line in the second source, Kalevi the Shari. Rashi paskins like Levi that permits, v'chein kosa b'halachos gedolos. But Rabbeinu Tam pasak kirav the osar. Rabbeinu Tam prohibits, like Rav, v'afilu besar nevela kachush, in besar shamein shchuta, even if the kosher meat is juicy, and the treif meat is lean, so the assumption is that the juicy thing is going to flavor the lean one, not the other way. So this is coming right out of the Gemara. This is not the Torah's novel interpretation. The Rav would say, the reach ki hai milsei, it's still considered reach. The Gemara sort of gives an explanation why. Because of HaRashba, the Rashba writes, Haskamas rov ha-morim lahatir. The consensus of most of the poskim is to permit. Mikol makom lechatchila asur litzlosam bitanur tsar. Lechatchila, you're not allowed to cook them in a narrow, meaning small, oven. V'imbol vashlam bekedera kol echad liatzmo. If you want to cook them, each one, in a pot. Afilu bitanur tsar. Upi hakedera megula. Mutter.
What is
that? Okay. Even in a small oven, and the open, the pot is not covered. It is permitted. Va'afilu l'chatchila. It means you're allowed to do this l'chatchila at the same time. So I'm not paskining this way. I would never tell you to do this. But according to the psak of the tour, and I believe the psak in the Shulchan Aruch, and I don't think the Rama disagrees, if you have something that has certainly for now has liquid that's being cooked in a pan, and you have both the milchiks and fleishiks are being cooked that way, you can cook it open in an oven at the same time in a small oven. I don't think anybody does that. Don't know why. Maybe there might be a concern of one splattering into the other, which is a chumrah the Rama mentions. But certainly, from the perspective of there being a problem, even when done at the same time, and kavu chomer when they're done bezacharzer one after the other, it is a non-issue. It is a non-issue, which, as I was talking to Rabbi Steinmetz very briefly after davening, his question, you'll see why eventually we're going to get there, what his concern is about these ovens that steam. I know what's bothering him, but there's a part of me that also says, one second, the Rashba says, and the Tur Paskins and the Shulchan Aruch Paskins, you have two pots, and definitionally have liquid in them, not pot roast in the literal sense, so that's not a problem, at the same time. Now, one of the issues that the Beis Yosef discusses, I didn't quote it here, the Beis Yosef takes issue with the Tur, because he believes that it's true not only in pot cooking, but even in pot roasting. In other words, he thinks that the difference is between whether it's in the kedera versus whether it's out open on a spit. And he thinks that the Beis Yosef thinks that even tzli, even roasting inside a pot, is also okay to do the two at the same time. It's enough of a hefsek somehow. So the Rama, I don't think, accepts that part. But the Rama does. But everybody seems to assume that if let's say there's some opening in the oven. Let me put it that way. If it's not a small oven, maybe there's a little opening. That to cook the two at the same time, meaning you have a chillant cooking, and you know, I don't know what else would you
rice
what
kind,
what's that.
Lasagna.
A lasagna, right. I let's say lasagna. There's a lot of often liquid, especially if you do it the efficient way we discovered, you know, make it rough, of cooking lasagna. They once upon a time used to boil the noodles first. Right? Is that how you right make lasagna? You don't need to boil the noodles first. You just set up your lasagna with the hard noodles, put water in there, and the two get done at the same time. Okay? So you learn other things in Shir too. But anyway, so let's take that. That's fine. Let's take that case. Those two at the same time should be mutter. It should be mutter because they're both in a kedera, they're both bishul. I'm Not saying you can do that. We would never consider that. Even if I went into my kitchen and I said to Chaviva, you know, you can do it at the same time, she would look at me and quote that very famous line that the Rav's wife cited to him, which is, you and you are there, trade fair in my kitchen, go out of here. Okay? But, certainly, it should be a total non-issue. And there's a reason why I'm harping on this, because you're talking about significant amounts of liquid in a kedera, and the Rashba says it's mutter at the same time, and even though the Ramah has certain chumras, we'll see, nobody would think that it's a problem when it's b'zachar zeh. Okay. Yes.
Do you see a distinction in the way, in the modern way of smoking meat? Is that a different type of bishul at all? Are you familiar with that?
We have a lot of meats that are, you know, we might say are cured. There's a discussion. There are two separate questions here. The one that's relevant is the one that is the question of what the impact on flavor is and things done at the same time. There's a separate question. It's a discussion, and probably I'm guessing it's a machlokas apostkim in the first simon in Hilchos Basar B'challah. I think it's simon pe zayin or pe ches in Yerudea, pe zayin, I think. Whether Ishun is considered Bishul. This issue actually comes up, in Bishul Akum questions. Right? If, in other words, in industrial settings where it's a problem, this was, I think, one of the questions with the whole tuna fish, part of the tuna fish controversy. Some people claimed it was a problem because it was cooked. But it's being cooked and it's Bishul Akum, and others want to say that the way it's cooked. So I'm not sure this regular canned tuna is not smoked, but there are all issues with steaming and smoking, whether or not those are considered Bishul for the purposes of Bishul Akum, for the purposes of whether something is Basar B'chalav Midda Oraisa. Obviously, even if it's not real Bishul, if you just mix the two together, it's a problem with the Rabbanon, a milk and meat mixed together. But whether or not Ishun, smoking, would be considered Bishul D'Oraisa is a question. Not entirely clear. For our purposes, we'll leave this out of the discussion for the moment. Okay, so the tour now continues and says, "Maskanas Adoni Avi Harash Zal Ki Rabbeinu Tam." My father, the Rush. This is the tour writing. Paskins in the conclusion like Rabbeinu Tam. It's not explicit. The Beis Yosef wonders, how did he know that his father Paskin that way? He says it's his maskana, so some suggest because the order in which the Rush quotes the opinions, the last one is the one he holds like. I've always kind of wondered, why didn't somebody just say, the answer is, the reason why the Tur knew that it was his father's maskana is because he asked his father. That could have been the end. This comes up frequently. There are many places where the Beis Yosef challenges the Tur's reading of the Rush, like, how do you know that he Paskins that way? I just wonder, maybe he asked his father, right? You know, he wasn't. The tour occasionally, I know of at least one place, I suspect there are a few more, where the tour talks about conversations he had with his father. He asked him a question. He relates this in the tour. So maybe he asked his father. But okay, be that as it may, the tour thinks that the Rush holds that way. But the Dafka b'tanurim shalahem shehem mechusim. So here he introduces a different criteria. Not big versus small, but whether the oven is completely sealed or covered. Like, so their ovens, it's almost like Rabbeinu Tam knows it has to be permitted, but he thinks we paskin like Rav. So there has to be a different reason we do what we do in our ovens. The answer is because our ovens, in the first tour we saw, are big, or our ovens have an opening, so of some kind. So that's what he said. V'dafka b'tanurim shalahem shei mechusim l'kach nechnas areach shal zeh b'zeh. Aval b'tanurim gedolim shalanu upihem pesuchim. Their openings are open. Their mouths are open. Ein lachush. Okay. So we're gonna go in a few moments to look at the Shulchan Aruch. I want to just present one other puzzle, which I don't feel the need to solve, but I'm curious if anybody will pick up. I read it; it bothered me deeply, and then I saw one of the later Achronim. The Aruch HaShulchan is the first one I saw who raises the question of what's going on. So, the next line that the Torah quotes is as follows: Pas chama shemunachas al gavei chavis pesucha shayayin esech aser lafisha koleid hareach harbe. He says, if you put hot bread on top of an open barrel of wine, so the so the bread absorbs the reach and it's aser. Aval hapas tzonenes afilo machaves pesucha opas chama vechaves stuma mutter. Okay, that's fine. V'chein mutter, so let me just translate. Let me translate that. If you have cold bread on top of an open barrel of wine, or warm bread, but it's on top of a sealed barrel of wine, no problem. You're also allowed to smell the bastiha, which is peirush. There's a little hole in the barrel where you can sniff to test whether or not the wine is good. So if you want to check whether or not the yayin nesach is still good, then it's not prohibited to that smell. Now, what is deeply, deeply puzzling about this passage, and there's something deeply puzzling about it. The last line, the first part we discussed extensively, which is, how do you put together the Gemara Pesachim with the Gemara Avodah Zarah? The Gemara Pesachim that would seem to lean in the direction of Paskin like Rav, that Reach is a problem, versus the Gemara Avodah Zarah, where Rava is the one who says that Bas Tiha, this last thing, is Mutter because Recha is not a problem. Recha Lav Nosahi. So I understand the first part of the Torah, I understand the Tushitos, I understand the last part of the Torah, but there's something deeply problematic about the passage he cites about the bread. Now, the Torah didn't make up that passage. The Torah didn't invent that. That passage, that discussion about the bread, is found both in Pesachim and in Avodah Zarah, where the Gemara presented... if you recall, three shitos. I don't care about the third one, Rabbi Yose's opinion, but the two shitos were whether if you put pas on top of a barrel of wine, whether or not, and the wine is, I think, truma, was the case in the Gemara, whether or not a non-Kohen can eat the bread. And Rabbi Meir said no, and Rabbi Yehuda said yes. That's on Samach Vav or Samach Zayin Amud Beis, whatever that last Amud we did was. And the Gemara suggests that initially, that machlokas atanayim mirrors the machlokas Rava and Abaye. That was what the Gemara said, that Rava, who says that you're allowed to smell the bastia, holds that if you put the bread on top of a barrel of wine, no problem. Even though the wine is truma, a non-Kohen can eat it. And Abaye, who says that you're not allowed to smell the bastia, says that if you put the bread on top of the barrel of wine, a non-Kohen's not allowed to eat the bread. So the Gemara said, is this not the same machlokas? So the Gemara said, for Rava for sure, Rava has to admit that Rabbi Meir can never agree with him. Rava has to say, I hold like Rabbi Yehuda, which is fine. Abaye, however, the Gemara say the following. No, you know, Reish Lakish, I think it was Reish Lakish or Sheshes, one of them explained that Mishnah so that the issue is not about a regular case of Reach. And what was that? Was it Reish Lakish or Sheshes? But I should say it right at least. I have to give the credit because whoever, Reish Lakish, when you cite his Torah, his lips move in the grave, as Chazal say. Okay, so Reish Lakish said the following. No, he said if the bread is hot and the barrel is open, everybody agrees it's also that Reichas Milsa. The only machlokas is when the barrel is either closed and the bread is hot, or the barrel is open but the bread is cold. So there's a question of whether or not you get any reach. But in the case where the barrel is open and the bread is hot, that's just like our case of bastiha. And of course, everybody agrees that it's also, because everybody agrees that recha milsa. That's the way that... Now, Rava doesn't have to accept Reish Lakish's presentation of the Mishnah. Rava would just say, it's a machlokas across the board. They always argue. They argue by every constellation of barrel and wine. Hot, cold, sealed, not sealed, and so on. What's strange about the Torah is that he's quoting the Ukimta of Reish Lakish, which was only there. Reish Lakish's, new reading of the Mishnah was only there to get it to work that all the positions of the Mishnah are machmir and hold that Recha Milsahi. But if the Torah himself is not clear, it's really not clear where his psak is, but the Shulchan Aruch is going to quote this also. And the Mechaber clearly paskins that Recha Lav Milsahi. That's black and white. The Mechaber doesn't entertain any other possibility in Shulchan Aruch. And how can the Mechaber then go and quote this reading of the Mishnah? The Gemara only came on to this reading of the Mishnah precisely to make everybody in the Mishnah hold like Abaye that Recha is Milsa. Recha is a problem. But if you hold that Recha is not a problem, as the Mechaber paskins, like Rava, then you should just say, the Mishnah is talking about every case. Doesn't matter, hot, cold, open, sealed. It's a machlokas, Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda, and we paskin like Rabbi Yehuda. Okay, so Rabbi Meir disagrees with us, but we normally paskin like Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Meir. So it's very odd, it's very, very odd that the Shulchan Aruch, the Torah might be one thing, the Torah doesn't take a clear stand whether he paskins like, Rav or Levi. But it's very, very odd that the Shulchan Aruch should actually quote that Lipsak Halacha. And the Aruch HaShulchan takes note of it. I don't want to go further exploring that, but when I only mention this because when I read the Torah and I read the Shulchan Aruch, I was scratching my head. I put two and two together. I said, it doesn't make any sense, but I only first saw the Aruch HaShulchan was bothered by it. So if anybody else had thought, thinks through this and is bothered by it, so I'm not giving an answer, but at least you know the question's a good question. Okay, so now let's come to the Shulchan Aruch and let's see how this actually works in Pesach. The Shulchan Aruch says, Sif Aleph. Now you'll notice, by the way, there is a monstrous, the way I broke things up is, the times and realm and font, which we begin with, is the Mechaber. And then on the fifth line you see Haggah, which is the Ramah's gloss. And I changed the font and you can see that this is a huge Ramah. Huge Ramahs are never fun to read, because he ends up quoting usually 30 different shittos and you have a hard time keeping them straight in your head. Happy days for Shulchan Aruch is when the Ramahs are one-liners. When the Ramah goes long, you know it's going to be a hard day. So the Mechaber writes the following: Ein solin basar kshera and basar nevela osho behema tmeya betanar echad. You're not allowed to cook kosher, non-kosher meat, whether it's kosher species, non-kosher species, non-kosher particular animal. You're not allowed to cook them in one oven. Ve'afal pishe nogin zebzeh, even though they don't touch one another. Ve'im tzla'an, if you did roast them together, harezeh mutter, you're allowed to eat the kosher one. Ve'afilu hoysa asura shemena harbe v'hamuteres rosa, even if the non-kosher one was juicy, and the other one was lean, you know. Raza doesn't, not even lean. Raza's like scrawny, you know, emaciated. So even in that case, you're still allowed to eat the emaciated one. Okay. Vim hatanur gadol, if the oven is big, shemachzak yud beis esronim, upiv pasuach, if you have both leniencies here, both reasons to be mekel, then mutar litzlosam bo, you're allowed to roast them together at the same time, uvuvad shelo yigu zebizeh, as long as they don't touch one another. Don't do this. We don't do this. V'im echad mehem mechusa b'ka'ara, o b'batzik v'chayotze bo, muta litzlosam afilu b'tan or katon, upiv sasam. The Mechaber says the following: if one of the two items is covered, meaning it's a pot, but the pot has a lid on it, or if it's covered with batzik, what that means is you don't cover your pot with dough, it means it's like a bereka. They're going to talk about two foods that we see in the Shulchan Aruch. I don't remember if the Ramah is going to mention them by name. One is pashtida, and one is paladin. I don't know how the first one, pashtida, was like a bereka with meat. Right? It was meat that was wrapped in a dough, and the paladin was an equivalent, but with milk inside of it. It was cheese. I'm not sure what was in it. I think it was cheese inside of it. So those are their two foods. So the point is that if you bake them in the oven, the meat and the milk are covered. They're not covered with a pot lid. They're covered with dough. So that's what the Mechaber says. He says that if one of them is covered, even with dough, and certainly with a pot lid, you're allowed to roast them together even in a small oven, which is completely sealed.
Why are they worried about splashing? Or like, you know...
So the Ramah talks about that at some point in, I don't know if it's in the long Ramah or elsewhere, he mentions that elsewhere I talk about when. So that is an issue, but that's a chumrah. The Ramah, I think, recommends to be Malcolm, and he says it's really a chumrah to worry about spot. Look, if the reality of something is splattering, then it's a concern. The question is, are you concerned, generally speaking, about that? In other words, if you're in a situation where there's no, where reasonable people would not be concerned about splattering, then to be choshesh for that is, to be really concerned about that is really a chumrah b'alma. Okay.
Does pashtida have liquid?
No. One of the concerns they do have, if you put them both on the bottom of the oven, is they might the filling might ooze out. And as you could have fat that oozes out from one. So that is a concern that's expressed. But fundamentally, inside is some type of a relatively solid speaking, which solid something, which might have components that can ooze out. That's the way I put it. Okay, so now the Ramah says, V'hu hadin lebasar im chalav, Nami Dina Hachi. The same din applies to Basar and Chalav. The Ramah, I don't know why, but the Beis Yosef basically decided in Siman Sadi Zayin to go off and do the whole sugya there. He goes through everything there, and when you come to here, to the Beis Yosef here on Kuches, he just says, go look in Sadi Zayin. The Ramah in Sadi Zayin, when his commentary, the Ramah wrote a commentary, I probably mentioned this, on the tour, called the Darkei Moshe. There's the Beis Yosef and the Darkei Moshe, which correspond to the Mechaber and the Ramah in Shulchan Aruch. So the Darkei Moshe on Siman Sadi Zayin says, I discuss everything later. Here, the Mechaber presents it as did the Tur, doesn't talk about milk and meat because it's not Hilchos Basar B'Chalav anymore, it's Hilchos Taruvos, which generally, you can have milk and meat problems there, but generally you deal with kosher and non-kosher as opposed to milk and meat. So the Ramah, who has reserved and kept his powder dry until now, the Ramah says, well, who adin lebasar b'chalav nami dina hachi. Okay, and you see the citation is to the Tur, Siman Sadi Zayin. Vinoagimla. I note this is just as an interesting thing. One of the great struggles with teaching Yoredeya to students. And I don't. I think I usually say I don't know why, but then in the middle of saying it, I figure out why. The problem with teaching Yoredeya to Smichas to anybody is that you don't know which to do first. Basar b'cholav taruvos. Now, basar b'cholav is presented first in the Torah and in the Shulchan Aruch, but the problem is there's some basic concepts that you really don't know until you've learned taruvos. However, unfortunately, there's some basic concepts of taruvos that were embedded in Hilchos basar b'cholav, which you need to know when you get to Hilchos taruvos. So the question is, whichever you do first, I always do taruvos first. I start with the later one with Siman Tzadi Ches, but it's a no-win situation. It's always easier doing Yoredeya the second time around or subsequently, because at least you know the parts that aren't there, but it is not. It's very difficult, actually. So here we can see this is a little drama that was created that maybe we could have been spared. But the truth is, it's not totally true. If the Torah is going to talk about, you know, milk and meat, bread, and so on, he does want to mention the issue of cooking bread in the same oven with meat, except for you haven't learned the sugya of Recha Milsahi, because that only comes in Hilchos Taruvos and Siman Kuf Ches. So it's one of these no-win situations. There was a win situation. He could have done Hilchos Taruvos first. The question is, why didn't he do that?
I think the answer is
that if you look what precedes Hilchos Taruva, Hilchos Basar B'Cholav, it's all the sort of things that come out of an animal. There's Hilchos Gidanasha, there's Hilchos Dam, Hilchos Beitzim, all that stuff, which species are kosher and not, and so on. So I think that because that's why, and Hilchos Cholav also, not Basar B'Cholav, and I think that that's why he does Basar B'Cholav first. I am offer tachas ragle hator, but if I were doing it, I might have reversed and done taruvos first, and then give all the general principles there, and then whatever's left for basar b'cholav you do. Okay, but anyway, so the Ramah continues. V'noagim lahachmir lachatchila afilu b'tanur gadol. The Ramah says we don't do it lachatchila, even in a tanur gadol, but b'di'evad lahakil afilu b'tanur katan. Even if the oven is small, and you cook two things together, we're makil to say that if it's milk and meat, that they're not treif. If it's flesh, if it's treif and kosher, that the kosher remains kosher as long as they're not touching. Correct. Okay, so that's the first line in the Ramah. Okay, you can see by the way this the Ramah. In the Ramah, generally speaking, there are citations and parentheses. The reason for that, I believe, is that the Mechaber sources, there's a sefer that was written. It's always printed at the top corner. It's called the Be'er Hagola. The Be'er Hagola identifies what was the Mechaber source. I don't know. The Be'er Hagola, I'm pretty sure, doesn't exist on the Ramah. I think the Be'er Hagola was a Sephardi, and I'm not sure why, whether he didn't have the Ramah and so on. So typically in the Ramah, in parentheses, the source for the Ramah is presented. It's important to be aware, especially in the older printings of the Shulchan Aruch, the Ramah did not write those sources, and there are many times that the commentaries on the Shulchan Aruch, the Shach, for example, will point out that the citation in parentheses is wrong. That's not the Ramah source, and sometimes it actually matters. But I'm pretty sure when you go back to the first printed edition you can find online of the Ramah from the 1570s or 80s or something like that, I don't know if that was actually the first edition, I'm almost certain that the citations of sources were not in the Ramah. Those were put in later, and sometimes they're errors identified, and sometimes it actually matters a lot. So you can see all the sources. V'im off number two now. V'im off a pas im basar, aser la'ochla im chalav im yesh pas acher. If you cook bread with meat, you're not allowed to eat the bread with milk if you have other bread. Now that, interestingly enough, is a big leniency, because the Mechaber's position not here but earlier is you're not allowed to eat it. Period. Why? Because the Mechaber says there are two considerations, into at least according to the Rif, as to why you're not supposed to eat this bread with milchiks. Issue number one that the Rif gave was that it's considered lechatchila. In other words, since you can eat the bread without milk, therefore to eat it now with milk is like taking advantage of recha milsa lechatchila. That's not so compelling, but that's what the Rif said. The second approach he gave was a more sort of, again, difficult to understand, but was that it's called a davar sheyesh lo matirin. We spoke about this. In other words, in order to apply bittel, and the assumption of the Rif is that the reason why recha doesn't count is because it's batel. In other words, it's not that it's not there at all, but it's batel, it's considered batel b'shishim, automatically. So the Rif says, but in order to rely upon bittel, you don't do that with something that has heter. And since there's a heter way to eat this pas, this bread, meaning not with milk, you're not allowed, it would be considered being bittul on a davar sheyesh lo matirin. Right? The example we gave the last couple of weeks, if I have an egg that was born, that was laid on Yom Tov, and it gets mixed in with other eggs, I'm not allowed to eat any of the eggs, there's no bittul, because I can eat it after Yom Tov. If I wait till after Yom Tov, I can eat them all. So you don't apply bittul there. So that was the second reason the Torah gave. Now what the Ramah here is basically ignoring the second reason, and says that no. He says that if you have literally no other bread, you have company coming over, or this is your meal, you always have, you know, cheese, and you have no other bread, and you want to make a grilled cheese sandwich, so if you have other bread, you're not allowed to use this bread. But if you have no other bread, it's motor, because that's called b'di'evet. Right? The Mechaber, I believe, would say, it's not called b'di'evet. That's still called maybe l'chatchila, or it's a davar sheyesh lo matirin prob. All right, so the Ramah says that v'im chenim oved kochavim asa pasim iser. If the goy cooked bread with trade food in the oven at the same time, asur liknos oso pas im yesh pas acher, dechozet mikre l'chatchila. You're not allowed to buy that bread if you have a choice to buy other bread. Avom ein lo pas acher berevach. If you can't easily find other bread, and this presumably means also if you can't find bread at the same price, or essentially the same price, mutar b'shnehem. Then in both cases, you're allowed. The zem mikri le'inyan zed, the eved. This is called the eved. One of the things that I should point out as an aside, you can see that they're trying to be very makel on the bread, the Ramah especially. It's clear to me that they were makel on Ashkenaz, because there's a position of the Rav Yah. The Rav Yah was one of the German pietists. I don't think I can give you... he was related to some of the Balei Tosfos. I don't remember how. But the Rav Yah, who's probably 12th century Germany, the Rav Yah argued... it's not cited in the Shulchan Aruch, it's only cited in the I saw in the Beis Yosef and Siman Tzadi Zion, that there's never a problem with bread in an oven with Reach. It's only with, let's say, two things of meat. Because there's no, the whole discussion of the Gemara of Mefatme, that each one kind of
influences the other,
it's not relevant by bread. That's you know, I mentioned that position, and he argues that according to Rav. Rav, who says that Reach is Osir B'dieved. He said, bread, it's not even an issue. Which, when you see something like that, you start to go, it's like, really? How do you come... if you told me that you held like Levi, so when I'm Achmer the bread. No, okay, fine. We won't. We'll call that it's always with the Eved. But you hold like Rav, you say that it's Aser Lechatchila, and the bread is not a problem. Which means, by the way, the unbelievable extremeness of that sheet is, if you remember the Gemara, you remember the problem we faced, the Gemara Samachlokas Rav and Levi. And then they quote a story, a Braisa, that says that if you bake bread in the same oven as meat, you're not allowed to eat it with milk. So the Rav Yoh has to say that Braisa is not Rav, it's only Levi, or something like that. Right? Because for Rav, who holds Recham, we'll see, that's only by meat, not by bread.
It might have been a communal practice issue.
Exactly. That's my point. In other words, even Rabbeinu Tam, after Rabbeinu Tam goes and paskins like Rav, all of a sudden he turns around with something that has no source in the Gemara and says, oh, but that's only by small ovens like this, but our ovens are big. Now, again, I'm not debating the difference in realia. I suspect he's correct in the difference in realia, but the Gemara doesn't say anywhere big oven, small oven. Is there a svara to it? Of course there's a svara to it. I can understand why in a bigger space it's less likely to have as much of an impact. But still, it seems like they all understand that there's a kind of practice that was accepted. So Rabbeinu Tam gets to it by a slightly straighter path. Right? But the Rav Yah's position is astounding, and I think it can only be explained by communal practice. In other words, that bread, you know, you can see from the Ramah, right? One of the things which I'm not going to do, it's later in this simen, is what happens when the merada, like ridui apas, what do you call it? Like, you know, like in the pizza, they have the like big flat piece of wood. What's the word for that? I mean, it's a bit spatula. I mean, yeah, I don't know if that's what the term is.
Paddle.
A paddle. That's right. So, in other words, they talk about using the paddle if the guy, if tarf was dripped on it, if literally tarf was dripped on it. So they say you can't use it then, you know, even if it's been cleaned off. But if it's not a benyoma, then you can use it because it's called b'di'evet. In other words, the next day you're going to go in and he has his thing that had traced up dripping on it the previous day, but it's no longer ben yomo, and that's called b'di'evet when he takes the bread out you can buy it. Because it's clear they were dependent upon non-Jews for their bread. Which, by the way, we know is true when it comes to the Gemara as well, not because of Tarfus, but we learned a few years ago the whole sugya, pas akum, right? We saw how makel they were, you know, pas palter and so on and so forth. So I think you are, Josh, 100% correct that the Rav Yah's position sets the alarm bells going off, and of course, this is communal minhag. But the Rav Yah sheet that doesn't even get cited, as far as I know, in the Shulchan Aruch, like it didn't even make it past that. Okay, so that was item number two. Item number three, Yesh Omrim. De'ein matir in recha afilu b'di'evet, ela im kein hatanur pasuach tzas min hatzar olamala b'makom sha'ashan yotzei. So this is the position that really already says like Rabbeinu Tam. Rabbeinu Tam. Now those, but a little more, he doesn't, without the leniency of a big oven, saying that you need to have at least some type of a little opening. Now just for note, as I mentioned at the beginning, our ovens do have a little opening. They don't have a big opening, they have a little opening, because that's where the stuff comes out. I discovered that because you put stuff, if you leave stuff on the top of the range, even though the range is off, and if it winds up being under the hood, it starts heating up, because the stuff, the hot air that's coming out from the oven. So, okay, you don't want to put a yahrzeit candle there on Yom Tov, because otherwise it will burn. You won't have it 24 hours later when you need to light your stove or something like that. So, don't leave it in that spot, because otherwise it won't be a 24 hour or 48 yahrzeit candle. It'll be like an 8 hour yahrzeit candle, because the heat is already doing the job of melting the wax and causing everything to burn faster. Okay, fine. So that's what he says. Uvemakom hefseid ein lahachmir b'di'eved afilu sasam legamri. If a makom hefseid, and I think the shach says hefseid gadol, if there's real loss involved, you did something already, and you cooked them at the same time, even in a sealed oven, b'di'eved recha lamilsi, if there's hefseid gadol. But if it's not hefseid gadol, if there's not a great loss, then you should be machmir to treat it as a treif. Okay. Number four. This is interesting. The im ha'isur davar harif. The chol shekein im aheter davar charif recha milsahi vafilu b'di'evet asur im shnehem megulim. So I want to explain something here as well. Some of you, I heard the nodding smiles. The rabbi's nightmare is the onion. The onion is the enemy. Because most shilas, it's very hard to get something, you really traipse up something in a kitchen, unless you literally brought it in like Nevela meat from the supermarket. It's not so easy to trafe things up. You have to work a little bit hard to really trafe them up. But the one thing that makes life hard for poskim is the onion. And the onion is because we treat onion as a davar harif. And the rule with the, normally, if you tell me, I heated up or cooked my cheese sauce in a fleshik pot, I didn't realize, what's the deal now? So if the fleshik pot normally hasn't been used in 24 hours, okay. Not a problem. You have to kosher the pot, but the cheese sauce is fine, and everything you poured it into. But if it wasn't the cheese sauce that you cooked, but it was onions that were cooked, even maybe it had without cheese in it, the onions are now fleshik, even though the pot hasn't been used in 24 hours. This typically comes up with someone who, you have to put a lot of chumers together, but we do. If someone chopped an onion with a milk knife and then tossed it into the chulent, that's where the kind of problems that come up. But again, you get cases where people were sauteing onions, and then that influences the status of stuff. The assumption of the Gemara, we learned this in the second parak. There was only one thing the Gemara actually said this by, but the Rishonim started to extend it to other things. It's a question of how far you want to extend it. We learned it by chiltis, asafetida, which is this very pungent spice from Persia or something like that. And the assumption is that even that when you take something that's a tam pugum, normally that a flavor that when it goes into food, it doesn't enhance the food. The assumption is that in sharp foods, it enhances the food. Which is why here, what the Rama is assuming in this comment, and it's something we spoke about last week and we'll probably come back to again, is that there are many who believe that Reich Alav Milsahi means that it's batel. It's not that Reach doesn't count. Reach is something, but it's always less than 1/60th. Now, we're going to see later in the Ramah, that can be a chumrah when it comes to Isurim that are Oser B'choshehu, like Chametz on Pesach. Right? If it's that Reach is nothing at all, so it's never a problem. But if it's that Reich ala Milsahi means that there's Bittel, then on Pesach there's no Bittel on Chametz. There are a number of things that could emerge from that. So when the Ramah here says, in number four, by a Davar Charif, he says the worst case scenario is where the Heter was a Davar Charif. Right? When we spoke about juiciness, which is a bigger problem? If the kosher or the treif is juicy? The treif. Right? Because the juiciness will go over to the other thing. But when it comes to davar charif, the davar charif takes something that it absorbs, which ordinarily would not count, would be pugum, or in this case would not be enough, and it's a flavor enhancer. So that's what the Rama says, that those who argue that a davar charif, that if the iser is charif, kol shekein amahet the davar charif, recha milsi v'afilu b'dievet asur im shnei magulim, if they're both uncovered. Avlam echar mehem mechusa, afilu b'batzek b'almamot. The Rama says you don't have to go that far.
Robert, can you talk for a second about using separate utensils, knives, cutting boards for onions?
it's probably always best to cut an onion with a parve knife. The cutting board might matter. It's not as clear with the cutting board, but certainly with a parve knife. It's good probably to have a parve cutting board, too, for sharp foods. That way you never run into any problems.
Okay, would garlic be part of that?
The whole onion family is generally assumed to be. Again, the Gemara only has it by one thing, and maybe a second, maybe by radishes. Now, it's always striking to me because I think onions are much sharper than radishes. But so it's a big debate. In Shulchan Aruch, there are different deos that are quoted. To get to problems, you have to you got to put a lot of things together. There's no question about it. But we do anyway. There's an area. So onions, they talk about even lemons, a concern about lemons cut with knives. The only time you theoretically might have to worry about your fruit that's chopped up is if it's things that we would consider sharp. So the answer is, the simplest solution is always cut an oven with your milchuk knife and milchuk cutting board. I'm not sure the cutting board is actually a problem. Erase it from the tape. Whoever's listening. Parv. I don't think that the board may not matter as much, but that you have to stretch to think whether the board would be a problem, but the knife should be a part of it.
Dairy is okay.
Of course it is. It's just, we wind up with scenarios where it's easier to... What?
It's leftovers.
Right, that's one thing. The other question I get sometimes is you have, let's say, a milchuk or fleishuk. It's usually a milchuk food processor. So there, when you're going to put onions in, you have to realize that the onions are going to be milchuk. Right? There, you don't really have a choice. I mean, you could kosher the blades if you really wanted, but... Okay.
But you're talking about a wooden cutting board, right? Not a plastic board.
Same thing. It'll be the same issue.
Really?
Glass might not be an issue. Fiberglass might be an issue, but...
The plastic also.
Yeah.
About 6 years ago, my daughter was taking a class for a year on kashrus, so she insisted that we have to have a separate cutting board for anything sharp and separate colored knives.
I'm trying to remember whether or not... I'm not sure about the cutting board. I have to think about it. I know why. I'm trying to figure it out. I have to go look and see if it's
got special colors,
clear.
So if you don't mix them.
Well, we all know what the universal colors are. The Ramah actually talks about that. Not which the colors are, but the idea that there are certain ways that we mark things. Everybody knows that blue is milchuk and red is fleishuk. There's some debates about other colors, but those two, I think, are very clear. Minhag Yisrael.
Chesed and Din. That's where that comes from. In other words, someone said, which drawer do you put the milchuk in? So it's supposed to be in the right drawer because chesed is in the right, then it's on the left. Meat is basar, it comes from an animal.
I never heard that one.
That's interesting.
Heard that one. Okay. All right. Fine. All right, next. Number five.
Green.
Number five. And here, this is where, actually, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to skip number five. Number five is the one we'll save for next week, and we'll do with the Tshuva Moshe. That's about where the concerns that some people have about using the same oven separately, b'zeh achar zeh, come from. So let's go to number six and number seven. Yesh omrim d'chol makom d'armin amrecha milseva osa b'di'evet hainu d'leka shishim en aheter neger ha'isur avu b'di'ika shishim en aheter afila b'chol ma'asha b'taner mevatel ha'isur u'letzorach hafseid yesh lin hokein. This requires a little explanation as well.
He doesn't say it's him, just yesh omrim.
That's the way, he's not necessarily committed to this, but that doesn't mean he doesn't hold it. That's how the Rama typically quotes things. Yeah. Yesh Omrim doesn't mean, like when he says one Yesh Omrim, he's saying that's his, way of saying that's what we Ashkenazim hold. Here it's a little trickier, but I think the Rama we'd be machmir for this. So this is the issue. It's very mistaber. The Rama's kula is not that this bitul b'shishim. Right? In other words, even those who hold that Reichas Milsahi, it would seem to be a given. Let's say according to Reina Tam, I have a small oven, and there's no opening, and I cook kosher and treif meat together at the same time. But let's say the treif meat is less than 1/60th of the kosher meat. It seems inconceivable, Rabbeinu Tam would say, that it's aser. Of course it's mutter, because how could it be a problem? Even if you literally touch them, mix them together, it would be batel. So what's really the backstory of the Shrama is something else. Let's say, this is a general question. When I deploy bitul b'shishim, am I allowed to use everything in the pot towards that or not? Meaning, let's say I don't have enough liquid in the pot, and my tray food touches one piece of meat that's touching another piece of meat that's touching another piece of meat. Now, I might have 60 times the amount of meat in the pot, and far more than that, kinega the isser, but in order for bittel to work, I have to assume that the isser spreads out uniformly in the entire pot. Now, when we cook in a liquid, we assume bishul, the liquid, is molich the tam throughout the pot, it's evenly distributed, it's batel. But the complications occur in Yeredeh and Simen Kofei, when you don't have liquid in between stuff, and it might be that if it touches one piece, maybe that piece becomes osser, and it may create a whole host of other problems that I can't explain now, but certainly that piece could be problematic. So here, what the Rama is saying is as follows, that when you're dealing with Recha, if you're going to use Bittul Peshishim, for those who would say it was necessary, you're allowed to count everything in the oven. Even if you have separate pieces of kosher meat, you're not afraid that it got absorbed into one more than the others. That's the idea that if you had less than 1/60th and it would be batel, that's not a chiddush. What's a chiddush is that you're allowed to use everything in the oven. That's his language. That v'adikah shishim and a heter afilu b'chol ma shibtana. What about afilu b'chol ma shibtana? No. In other words, it's not that every piece has shishim keneged the tray. It's you have to put everything together to get shishim, and maybe the isser got it to one piece more than it got it to other pieces. So Rama says, for those who are adopting this position, you can be lenient and assume that it was uniformly distributed. It makes sense, by the way, anyway, if you're talking about Recha, I would think, because Reach should function like Mashke, like a liquid. But okay. Finally, number 7. Yesh Omrim, the Isra Oser B'mashahu, anything where something is Oser B'mashahu, there's no Bittul B'shishim, Kegon Chametz B'Pesach, Recha Milsav Oser Afilu B'di'eved, Im Hatanur Katan V'husasim, V'ya Isra V'heter Megulim Toch Hatanur. Those who want to say that Recha Milsav is based upon Bittul, and by the way, even though the Rift doesn't talk about it, that's clearly, he doesn't talk about Chametz and Pesach, that is clearly the Rift's position. The Rift describes the issue of Recha Milsav in terms of Bittul, right? That's why he said, bread and meat, there's no Bittul, because it's a davar sheish latirin. That's a principle within the world of Bittul. So the Rif very much saw it this way, even though he doesn't talk about what the din would be by Chametz B'Pesach. So those who say, therefore, if something is Oser B'mashahu, if the oven's small and sealed, and both the Isser and the Heter are uncovered, it's Oser. V'yeshom rim she'en l'chalik, Recha la milsahi, period, it doesn't matter what you're talking about. Uvamakom hefsed yesh lismoch al divrei hamekilim. If there's a makom, a real loss, then you can rely upon the lenient opinion that Recha la milsahi, even by things that are oser bimashahu. Okay, fine. So we'll stop here. Next week, I will, God willing, be here for Shabbos, so you get a double header. And on Sunday morning, God willing, we will then finish up the last piece of the Ramah, Siv Beis, which all deal with where we have much more liquids and concerns of things that might be problematic in ovens, and then we will turn around and do Ramosha's Tshuva. If